Oh man, we in the building today. Hold up. I'm feeling good today. What's going on, everybody? And welcome back to another season, a new season, new episode of the Black Men Win podcast with your boy Tyler Pie Guy. Actually, we're not even that name anymore. I am Tyronza Hicks. You feel what I'm saying? And we are here for, season seven of Black Men Win? We've been doing seven seasons of this thing.
Congratulations.
Thank you, man.
No small feat.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. First of all, before we get into our interview, I want to say thank you to everybody that continues to listen, comment, subscribe to the podcast. We appreciate y'all. We thank y'all. And we love y'all for all that you have done. Let me just say this. During our hiatus this summer, the Black Men Win podcast was nominated for Best Black Host Podcast.
Wow.
At the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
Do that.
And I genuinely have to give a hand clap of praise to the Lord and Savior above and to everybody that voted. 5 million people voted. They told us 5 million plus people put in cast votes.
Are you serious?
I'm not joking.
Wow. That's social proof for you.
Oh, my God. And so out of so many podcasts and out of so many just shows that I watch, mm-hmm. and to be in the final slate with Nightcap, Indisputable, Club Shay Shay, others that are really doing their thing in the space. It's amazing. So I'm really proud of Black Men Win, and thank you guys for voting. Today we are live from the podcast movement right here in Washington, D.C. Been here August 19th through the 22nd. If you're not here, I guess we'll see you next year. You understand what I'm saying? But we're here live, and I got my boy here, the good brother, a man who is statured in the audio and video space. This man looked me dead in my face, looked me and my friend dead in my face and said, you know, I only been doing video for only 12 years. Like, don't look at us who've been, you know, in the space, you know, trying to figure it out. Don't come to us telling us you've been doing this for 12 years and then said it lightly. You understand what I'm saying? I got my good brother Samori in the building. What's going on, fam? How are you?
Thank you, Tyron. It's a pleasure.
Of course.
It's an honor, you know, to be on your show, man.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for coming. I met you, of course, through the weekend. You're a dope creator.
Thank you.
And not just creator, producer, the production, your skills in audio and video. You've been doing audio for almost 30 years, yes?
Yes.
30 plus. Mm-hmm. Talk to us a little bit about the variations and the differences that you've seen in the audio space in the last 30 years.
Wow, that's a good question. First of all, thank you.
No problem.
You know, I
of
appreciate
course.
That, the kind words. And, you know, always give the glory to God.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's been interesting because my journey, I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska.
Really?
Born and raised in Omaha, Nebraska.
Shut up. What now? What
Malcolm
made you
X
come?
And birthplace of Warren Buffett.
Hey, now, come on now. Talk to him. You got to let him know. Let him know the history.
Yes, sir. And so, you know, I grew up in North Omaha, mm-hmm. which is a working class, predominantly black neighborhood mm-hmm. in Omaha. Very much like any other predominantly working class
Absolutely.
Black community.
Absolutely.
in the country. So very similar. And I always loved creating, man.
Right.
I started out writing songs when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, just writing songs.
Wow.
I was always in love with some little girl, so I'm always writing a song. And started playing the drums pretty mm-hmm. young. And wanted to be in every talent show, rapping and everything I could do creative.
Wow.
Always loved it. But being in the Midwest, being in a smaller town, especially, you know, you're talking about 80s, 90s.
Mm. How was Nebraska in the 80s? What music were you listening to back then?
Good stuff. We always leaned toward the West Coast and the South, musically.
So really?
We're talking about hip-hop. We're talking about Outkast.
Yep.
Goody Mob.
Yep.
Of course, Pac.
Ice Cube.
E-40.
I,
we always gravitated to the South and the West Coast
gotcha.
Because the style in Omaha, the flow is like a mix between the South and the West Coast.
Really?
It's slow. It's very slow. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, guys riding cars with Daytons.
Of course.
And such and such. So that was a lot of our influence. And, of course, there was no internet back then.
Of course.
And so growing up in a place like that, the idea of having a career in media, it was like going to the moon. So to be honest with you, I had no idea. There was no model for, okay, this is what the future is going to look like.
Right.
I just loved creating. And when I graduated from high school, the whole thing was go to college. Go to college, get a good job, get a pension, and one day retire.
That's always been the...
You feel me?
You
feel me? And so, okay. So I went that step and started doing that and graduated from college and became a financial analyst for Union Pacific Railroad.
Wow, nice.
And so I was very young. I was in my early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And probably within 6 months of starting at this job, working in a cubicle,
mm-hmm.
my boys back in my old neighborhood were making music. They set up little makeshift recording studios.
Really?
So when you say, how did the industry change? We were recording on tape recorders, Casio keyboards, Radio Shack microphones.
Wow.
We didn't have sequencers, so we would have to make the beat. So if the song is 3.5 minutes,
yes.
We had to play the beat for 3.5 minutes.
For 3.5 minutes.
And then when that's done, the next track, let's play the bass line for 3.5 minutes. So that's
step-by-step process.
By step. You know what I mean? And so, but... You know, but I fell in love with that process.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I remember the first session with my boy Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky Brown. Shout out to Lucky. My guy Lucky. And went to his home studio, made a song. It was the first time I heard my voice, like, rapping on a cassette, because it was cassette back then, right? We
right.
didn't have MP3s. We weren't even rocking CDs.
Right.
And I put that cassette in my car, and I said, this is it. I'm not doing anything else, man. And within... Probably from that moment, for about another year and a half, I was in my cubicle writing rhymes every day at my job as a financial analyst. And
so, wait, pause that right there, because I don't think people understand what you just said right there. In your cubicle,
uh-huh.
at your 9-to-5,
mm-hmm.
you were still working on your dream.
Oh, yeah. Had to, because... To some, it's a dream. To me, it's the life that
it's
I
live. It's the path, yes.
I just was living that life.
Right.
And I would look at that clock, and I was sitting in that cubicle, and I was being crushed just I'm like, what? I can't do this anymore. So long story short, man, within 2 years of this job as a financial analyst, I was on the Greyhound bus headed to the East Coast, not really knowing what the future was going to be. It was the longest bus ride of my life. I'll never forget. It was the longest, darkest bus ride. Landed in Newark, New Jersey.
Shout out to Newark. Shout out to Jersey.
1997.
Mm-hmm.
And settled in South Jersey for a couple of years. But by 99, I moved to Philadelphia, man. And started building Little Drummer Boy Recordings, my recording studio.
Right.
Started building that at that time, man.
And were you still working, or was the passion now at this point just full steam ahead?
So when I initially came out,
right,
I was like, I'm just doing this. I'm full steam ahead. I'm working on music and writing songs, but obviously it wasn't making any money. That's always a challenge.
Of course. And so, this is the East Coast.
I wasn't making any money. So I'm just like, hold up, man. So fortunately, I did have the degree.
Right.
So I was able to fall back. I went to Coca-Cola for a couple of years.
Oh, good. Exactly. Exactly.
And then left Coca-Cola. Like, I'm about to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about to do this because, you know, I was taking my money and buying equipment. And I'm like,
but see, you were still investing in the dream.
Bootstrap.
Right?
Got a bootstrap.
Still working, still getting. And I think that concept, I think, gets lost right now in entrepreneurship in the podcasting arena right now is. Because podcasting is so oversaturated, and to a degree, the audio and video market is pretty oversaturated as well.
Mm.
When you say bootstraps, and I'm still mixing, mastering, working, synthesizers, all of that good stuff. I'm putting out raps. I'm writing my rhymes. Mm. I'm out here. I'm still working on my dream.
Mm.
I don't think that concept, as of today, gets enough, because I think people just want instant gratification.
True.
And I think that instant gratification is I call it a gateway drug.
Yeah, very much.
I call it a gateway drug very because much. You can get gratified instantly and then it's over.
That's right.
Then how do you feel later?
Mm-hmm.
What happens then?
Right.
Did you take the necessary steps to make sure, to your point, that you're still working, mm-hmm. even when the podcast money, the sponsorship money, how whatever money that's coming in from your dream, your passion, your business, you have to know sometimes it's going to go up and down.
That's right.
And yeah. when it goes down, are you okay mm-hmm. with having to put on your bootstraps again?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we are in that space of bootstrapping.
You know, in a lot of cases, you're right. And the other part of it was I wasn't doing it for money.
And that's the thing, too.
You know, it wasn't – I was doing it.
It was a passion.
Even though no money was being
made. Right.
And I do notice nowadays, you know, I'll work with folks and – for example, in the music space, they're like, I'm going to put this single out and I'm going to get on. And what I will say sometimes, is, you probably will. I hope you do get on. But, man, let's have a pipeline of material.
Let's have some
content. Because music is in that category of content
right.
today, just like podcasts are and whatnot. So, you know, making one song, like, I'm about to get on. This is going to be it. And I'm doing this to make this money and generational wealth. That's right. a great idea.
Right.
And it might work for 0.0000001%.
Of the,
but for the most part, man, you know, you do something you love. And if you don't love it, then find something you love.
Can you talk a little to that? Like, how do you know you're doing something that you love versus just doing something to do something? And then calling it my passion, my love.
See?
What is the distinct difference?
Well, the honeymoon never ends when you do something. You know, because, like you said, those ups and downs.
Yes.
So when it's down and you're starving and everybody thinks what you're doing is whack and everybody tells you you can't do this and you look at how saturated the market is and you're feeling like, oh, man, and you're feeling beat down and you do it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's an indication that you probably love that.
Yeah. and I listen, I can say through my own experiences in my business, there's been some down days.
Yes, sir.
There's been some down moments. I can only assume that you've had those down moments as well.
Brother.
And brother. I think people don't understand those down moments really take a toll sometimes. And in those down moments, I remember even now, still working here, podcast movement, right? We still working. And not to say I'm in a down moment, but there were times where in the space that I was in, I was just not ready to work. I was just not motivated to do it, right? I got the content out. I can put it out.
Yes, sir.
I'm ready to put it out. Just not motivated to do so.
Yep.
And so in that space, got to talk to yourself in the mirror.
You have to, man. You got to get yourself out of that rut because, you know, it is emotional.
Absolutely.
We are creatives.
Yes.
And I
have to remind myself of that every day.
It's a very, very emotional space to be in.
Yeah.
And it's like Erykah Badu says, I'm sensitive about my issues.
Listen, you know what? I didn't understand really that concept until she said that. Like, really getting older and understanding, like, yo, I'm I am.
See?
I am, to a degree, I am.
See, and a lot of times people will get so emotionally tied into what they're doing, which makes sense, that when they're not getting the feedback that they feel like they want, or they're not getting the support that they feel like they want, it just beats them down to the point where it's just like, yo, I'm done.
What was the thing for you that kept you going? What was that thing for you? What was that in your mind and in your soul and in your heart that kept you going? Because to some that may be listening or watching, they are on their last leg. I talk to a lot of people here at Podcast Movement, and they're in a pod fade mode. So pod fade is basically burnout, podcast burnout. So they're ready to just, I'm done with the consistency. I'm done with the advertising. And again, podcasters, quote unquote, are everything. They're the host.
Yes.
They're the marketer, the advertiser. Most of the times, if you're independent, you're all of that. Tied into one.
Yes.
Right? You are your videographer sometimes. You are your audio mixer and production, post-production video and audio. You are that. You are your advertiser. And that gets a lot. I've experienced podcast burnout. I've experienced pod fade. So in your moments of that burnout, what was that thing for you that keep you going?
Right. It was two things along the way. All right. So when I first left Omaha, there was a lot of doubt about why I left.
Right.
And a lot of cynicism.
Really?
You can't do this. You know, there's a lot of people out there. You know, my own father.
Was it? Oh, God bless. I was just about to ask too.
So I didn't grow up with my father in a house, but he was around. He didn't live in the same city, but I remember him saying, you know, a lot of people are trying to go into the music industry. So I don't know why you think, you know, you can make it in that. But to his credit, I left a job as a financial analyst. I left something that looked so stable.
So, right.
I think our family loves us and they want the best. Even my mom, just, you know, people were like, nah, and friends. I mean, the thing that, it was the friends that just, you know, I remember I rhymed for my friends one time and they started cracking up, you know?
Don't laugh in my face.
I laughed with them, but inside them. So the first motivation was, I'm proving y'all wrong.
And that's it.
I'm proving y'all wrong. And failure is not an option. And yes. So that fueled me for a while. But then, you know, I met my wife, man. We got married and we had kids. And from that point, that became the fuel, man, my family. And, of course, my wife and two boys. But also, you know, my mother and cousins. And just thinking about, like we all say, it's kind of cliche now, generational wealth. Just wanting to be able to provide.
Absolutely.
And thinking about not just my kids, but their kids and their kids and their kids and so on and so forth.
Now we are here, 30 years in the game. Mm. You know what? Can we say almost maybe 40? I'm just adding 12 years onto the. I'm not letting that go.
You go ahead. 12.
I'm not letting that go. So when you stepped into the video space, how was that? You have all this experience in now the audio space. You are well versed. Mm. You are mixing, mastering everything at this point.
Right.
You step into the video space. How was that?
Yeah. So the audio obviously was first because I was writing rhymes. I was producing.
Right.
You know, I'm still a musician. I don't make as much music as I'd like these days. Mm-hmm. Because we got to pay the bills.
Right? Absolutely.
And so, I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought. Just say that one more time.
So, stepping into the video space.
Yes. Okay. So, the music and the video were happening concurrently. My studio is based in Philadelphia.
Right.
It's called Little Drummer Boy Recordings.
Right.
We've been recording and producing music for many years, not just music, but podcasts and audio books. And we even teach emerging audio engineers, music producers, and folks who want to grow their music businesses. We teach them. We have courses to kind of teach them how to do that.
Oh, wow.
But probably about 12 years ago, and again, when you have a business, sometimes you're in hustle mode.
Right. That's a fact.
You're like, okay, yeah, I'm going to record you. And I'm gonna print your CDs, you know, because back then we had CDs.
Right.
Print your graphics, and I'm gonna build your website. So you're just hustling.
Right.
Right. And at the time it was like, okay, somebody asked for a music video, so I'm like, okay, shoot, I'll shoot your video.
Right.
So that is how the video part started.
Right.
It started very creatively, just around the music, but then it started to evolve. Probably about 7 years ago, I started to get deeper into marketing,
mm-hmm.
because marketing is the key, Tyron. You know, and I knew. Especially having a brick and mortar that was barely staying afloat for a long time. I got to get the word out, man. I got to figure out how to get this word out.
Yeah.
And I shot a commercial that ended up going on Fox TV.
Right.
And it really started to, the business started to grow. And
right.
I was like, wow, that's powerful. Then I started a couple of years later really looking into marketing more deeply, the science of marketing, mm-hmm. paying for marketing courses, paying for mastermind programs, being in groups with people like Frank Kern.
Yeah, shout out to Frank Kern. Group, yeah.
Rudy Moore, obviously studying the great Alex Hormozi.
Yep.
Really getting into that. And then it dawned on me. It was like, listen, social media is so video heavy, right?
Mm-hmm.
So image heavy. To merge the video production with concepts and marketing, I just was like, this is what I need to do. And I started doing it for my company and running ads on Instagram and Facebook and doing the thing. And the ROI started going crazy.
Just going nuts.
And I was focused on my own business.
Right.
Like, and then as it started growing, people were like, yo, like, what's going on? I see your commercials everywhere. And then I do a commercial for somebody else. Then I do something for somebody else. Then I record somebody's podcast. And that's kind of how it evolved. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
So the business just instinctively, because again, if you're doing audio, they're going to want the video,
yes.
In a sense,
yes.
Right? So,
yes,
the fact that you took on both, you have a small team. How is it? And that was my next question, because a lot of us who are creating businesses, whether that be in the audio space or otherwise, sometimes we can't do it alone.
Yeah,
right. And there comes a point in the time where you say to yourself, "I can't do this on my own." When was that point for you?
Yeah.
Because as we've talked off camera, you have about 7 employees, 4 on the video side, 3 including 4 including you on the audio side, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how is that? First of all, how is that setting up the team? And then how is it regulating the team?
There you go. In the creative space, for me, I found it hard to develop a team initially mm-hmm. because I was so hands-on.
Right.
You know, you start a media-based company. You start a creative company.
Yep.
Because you do it. That's what you do.
I already know.
You're not thinking that somebody else is going to come in and do anything.
Right, right.
And it was hard. And I would go through these ebbs and flows of burning out.
Mm-hmm.
And then getting motivated.
Yep.
And burning out.
Yep.
And I read this book called The E-Myth Revisited. Mm. Right? It's by Michael Gerber.
Okay.
One of the most important books I've ever read. And the premise is, in any business, there's basically three layers.
Mm-hmm.
You have the technician, that is the worker bee. They do the work.
Right.
You have the manager, who is making sure that the processes are in place, kind of holding things down. And then you have the entrepreneur. The entrepreneur is the visionary.
Right.
The entrepreneur sets out the vision and the plan. The manager manages that, and the workers work.
Right.
Well, when I read that book, I was like, well, dang, if I'm just a technician all the time, I can't really grow. I can't grow.
Right.
So that book was so impactful. And since I teach folks audio engineering at the studio, mm-hmm. started to hire some of my graduates as audio engineers.
Oh, wow, nice.
And then I was like, yo, now I can get away from the mixing board. Like, cool, right? So I got away from the mixing board. But I was still like producing music and mm-hmm. the other, and then had a couple students who were producers, so they could produce, so I could move away from that. So I started being able to back away from certain things, and then it opened up my capacity to do other things. Then I was like, yo, now I have time to think about my marketing.
Cause see, now, what's the trust level?
Yeah.
What is?
Yeah.
Cause teams nowadays, when you get a team like that. Mm-hmm. Small, trustworthy, they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're regulating it so well.
Mm.
Is there any conflicts, butting heads, or anything like that mm-hmm. when it comes to...
Yeah.
Even having the studio space as you have with the small team that you have, is there any type of conflict that happens in there?
With human beings,
absolutely.
It's not always going to be perfect.
Right.
But another thing that I got out of this particular book, The E-Myth, was, so I used to think, I just need another me. If I just had another person like me, right? If I just had another me, then I'm good.
Nope.
But you don't want
another you. Yeah,
you don't want somebody who's going to come in and try to have a vision different than you or whatever.
Absolutely.
You have the vision. So one of the things I learned was, okay, if I'm going to put somebody in an audio engineering role, I've got to give them the playbook for how we do this.
Right.
So you've got to have some type of standard operating procedures for the roles that you're putting people in. This is the job. This is what you do. You come to the studio 30 minutes early to prep. You do this. You do that. This is how we talk to customers. You give them the playbook. Just like if you go work for any corporation, they're going to give you a book on kind of what you do.
Absolutely.
They're going to give you conduct and policies and all that. So I had to operate like that Fortune 500 company. And then first and foremost, people respect that. They come to you. It's not just, what's up, but come on in. Yeah, I'm going to have you recording people and you just moving around. No, here's your handbook so you know what our rules and regulations are. Here's the job. And once you do that, then people aren't going to come in and second guess you as much because this is the job. Oh, you can't do this job? Oh, you're not fulfilling this job?
Absolutely.
Oh, no worries. Okay. Sorry, I'm going to get somebody else to do this.
What has been one of two questions here? What has been the most challenging mm-hmm. In this process for you
mm-hmm.
and what has been the most rewarding?
Which process?
In starting and building Little Boy Productions.
Little Drummer Boy
Productions, yes.
So
what has been the most rewarding and then the most challenging?
The most challenging is the people. So that question you asked is
right.
Perfect. It's managing people.
Got you.
And managing creatives,
mm-hmm.
where everybody you hire is an artist. And those artists out there listening, you already know what
absolutely.
I mean.
Absolutely. We definitely
Everybody's
do.
Everybody's an artist. And you have these expectations.
Right.
Like, come to work on time. You know, you're working with clients. Like,
right.
like give them
right.
great treatment, yep. quality. Don't rush. So the people part is definitely challenging. And nowadays, we are in an era where it's like you led off with the idea that it's kind of a microwave age. Everybody
yes.
wants instant gratification.
Mm-hmm.
And so to get especially young people to understand that, hey, if we're starting like right here today, if you look 2 years down the road, this is what the future is going to look like if we do this, 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 and this, and this. Some people, 2 years is too long to even think about. Some people, they it's like, no, I need this now.
You're right.
You know, I'm marrying my girlfriend like in 6 months. And so I need this money now. That's what folks say, right? I need this now. So the idea of like planning a career, it's a lot more difficult to do that with younger people nowadays. It's not impossible, but they want it now.
It's the instant gratification.
They want it now.
Mm-hmm. They really want it now. What's been the most rewarding?
Man, there's a lot of that.
Or one of them.
You know, I'm gonna be. So when you first said that, it had nothing to even do with the business. It has to do with my son. Just seeing the young men that they're becoming. You know, my oldest will be a senior in college.
Nice.
My oldest will be a junior in college.
Wow.
My youngest will be a senior in high school. And just seeing the young men that they become. And as I was building the business early on, I used to feel like I wasn't at home enough. I wasn't at the soccer games on Saturdays and whatnot.
Right.
Because Saturday's a big music day to be at the studio, getting clients and whatnot. But I was always there, of course. But I always felt like, man, did I spend enough time? But seeing who they are becoming is the most rewarding.
I love that. And first of all, I just want to let y'all know, Samori literally is him and his wife are beautiful.
Oh, thank you, bro.
Right? I didn't even know they kids was in college. I wouldn't have thought at all. Before we get out of here, Big S,
I'm up here sweating your show up. It's kind of hot in the atrium.
Listen, they don't want to put on no AC. I think because it's cool outside. That's why DC is mad cool. You know, we black. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? We get hot real quick. They ain't got the AC on real.
That's real. I just got to let y'all know a little sweat.
Don't judge me. Thank you. What's next? What's next for you? What's next for Little Drummer Boy Productions?
Sure.
What are some of your goals for the upcoming year?
Sure. So fortunately, Little Drummer Boy is running. You know, I've got the team in place, which is great. At the studio now, I teach a few classes a week. That's kind of what I do at the studio: audio engineering, music production, music business, which gives me a lot of time for my personal brand, which is where I do all the video, right? I'm a video marketer. Yeah.
Brand on the camera.
Yes, sir. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I'm a video marketer, video marketing and content creation. So I help brands, I help podcasters build their businesses using video.
And let me tell you something. He's dope.
Oh, bro.
Thank you, bro. He took me and my boy Quincy Lewis. Shout out to Q Lewis.
You
313 in the building.
Yes, sir.
He took us, told us to, hey, say something about your podcast, you know, give us a cold line, you know what I'm saying, and then go into the link in the bio,
that's
everything,
right, the explaining
your podcast, the call to action,
and
that's it.
Yeah.
He took that, and as I told him, there are so many companies who do what he does, and I'll show y'all later, trust me. That does what he does, and they don't do it to a high quality. I look at a lot of these on the social medias, and I look at them, and I'm like, wow, they're dope. But then when I see yours, I'm like, oh, there's another level to this.
Appreciate it, man. Yeah, and because, you know, like video, not just video, but marketing is essential.
It's essential.
And when we talk about people struggling and flailing in their businesses, I can tell you 100% is the marketing. 100% is the marketing. You know how I know? Because there's a gentleman named Gary Dahl in the 1970s. I still remember this guy because I was born in 72. He invented the pet rock. You remember the pet rock?
Wait, what?
He invented a pet rock. And you know what he did? He took a cardboard box. He put some little grass in there, some fake grass, put the rock on there, put a label that said pet rock, had a manual inside to tell you how to take care of your rock, and he made millions. Millions and millions of dollars. You know why? Because he advertised. And I'm like, if he could sell a rock, you can sell your song, you can sell your podcast. It's marketing.
And on that note, guys, that was something I never knew.
Yes, sir. Gary Dahl. Look him up.
Gary Dahl.
D-A-H-L.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's probably them built the infrastructures that we see today.
Man, who are you telling?
That is crazy. Samori, I appreciate you, my boy. I
appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
Is there something you would like to say to the people before we get out of here?
Absolutely, man. Listen, keep believing in yourself.
Absolutely.
The only person that has to believe in you is you. And keep in mind too, like, you don't have to sacrifice your entire self. This is what we do. It's not who we are.
Absolutely.
So when you ask me like what am I proud of, I said my kid. It's not who we are. You do not want to be a human doing. You want to be a human being. You want to be. And so what I ask you to do, go to my website, samoricoles.com. You know, if you're interested in marketing, if you're interested in video services, no matter where you are in the world, if you need your video edited, if you need us to curate your reels and your shorts and really make them look spectacular with animation and, you know, and really to give you some insight on the marketing side of it, because it is a science. You want to open up the video a certain way. You want to have the body and you want to have the call to action. And so that's going to help drive traffic to your website or to your podcast. So, you know, keep believing and keep shining.
Amen. We'll have all the links and everything in the description when we put it out. Samori, thank you so much again.
Man, my brother.
We appreciate you, keep doing your thing.
And I'm proud of you, bro.
Man, thank you.
Proud of you. I appreciate y'all.
And to everybody else, we thank y'all so much. Again, I want to thank everybody that voted for the Black Men Win podcast to be in the final slate for nominees for the People's Choice Podcast Award. Just give your hands up. And I'm just so thankful.
Yes, sir.
So, Samori, thank you again for coming through. And thank you guys again. And we'll see y'all on the next one. All right.
All right.
Peace.
Y'all be good.
All right, my guy.
That was dope, man.